שלום ליהודים, שלום לבני נוח, שלום לגויים. It's the evening of the sixth day, כף בחודש טבס, פרשת שמוס, תשע"ו, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 31 December 2015, webcasting from Israel and its eternal two-front war. No, I'm not talking about the menace from Gaza and the growing menace in Lebanon and Syria of ISIS and related Arab murder cult gangs. The headlines this morning were about hundreds of ISIS types coming closer to the Golan. Even more may soon come as an indirect result of Russian operations. They would be fleeing south in our direction. And the IDF is on high alert all along the border. Farmers have been told to stay away from the border. And of course, since the Arab devil Samir Kuntar was exterminated a couple of weeks ago, in a suburb of Damascus, Hezbollah's high priest of evil, Hassan Nasrallah, has been threatening revenge. That's how Muslims always justify their aggression. It's always self-defense. It all started when he hit me back. No, when I say two-front war, I mean the far wider war against us, not only by today's point men, the Muslims, but their post-Christian backers in Europe and elsewhere, Canada, Australia, the States. For sure, that is one front, which, judging by history, is eternal, never ends, and for sure it will not end until Moshiach comes. I mean, when in history was there ever a time without people hating the Jewish people big time and oppressing us in some fashion? Mount Sinai, we say in English, but in Hebrew it is Sinai, which could mean in Hebrew, my hatred. Sina means hatred, and that suffix is commonly used to refer to a first-person possessive construct. In modern Hebrew, we would say Sinati, but that's close enough. Mount Sinai is where God gave us his Torah, and it's no meaningless coincidence, that name. Name could be mean my hatred, meaning you Jews will now represent and bear the brunt of hatred of me, capital M. And why the hatred of God? Because he wants man to resist temptation, which is always a powerful urge toward pleasure in the short term, but not in the long. No, one eternal war is Gentile hostility, Gentile being a very good translation of the word goy. Goy means nation, a people. When God bestowed the tablets on Moshe, he said his people would be a holy people, a goy kadosh. And the word Gentile in English stems from the same Latin root as the Spanish gente and the French gens, which means people, man's largest social organization. So one front is this hatred directed us by the nations of the world, which UN voting patterns prove to be exactly as Hashem knew they would be. And the second front comes from within, from the Erev Rav, the mixed multitude within us, who are forever tugging on the Jews to stop being so Jewish. The external enemy does not shy away from murdering us, knifing us in the back, running us over in the street, whose cause is financially backed by NGOs who pay these goyim. No, the second front is internal, among our own people, for whom the right path is to get us to imitate the Gentiles, and especially on this night. Oh, how the enlightened look forward to celebrating New Year's Eve in Gentile fashion, by partying and drinking to excess. And so it was fitting today that there were various superficially highly unconnected stories in the media revolving around this internal aggression. One story concerned a new book, a new novel, another shallow love story. They commonly deal with adultery and other forms of marriage frowned upon by what used to be called polite society. I mean, love stories never spend their time on boy meets girl, they fall in love, get married, live happily ever after. There's no story there. The story is the obstacle to their love. Romeo and Juliet's relationship, opposed by both families, in Casablanca, the classic Hollywood movie. That's a romanticized story of adultery, and it's also a subterranean tale, as old as Oedipus Rex, but that's another story. There was Eric Segal's famous love story, all about the barrier between a rich wasp and a poor ethnic Italian girl. Love stories are about obstacles to the couple. And in this week's big seller in Israel, we have a love story between an Israeli woman who meets an ancient Palestinian bohemian, I think, in New York City. And of course, the sad ending is that when they return to Israel, he returns to Ramallah and she to Israel. The Ministry of Education has rejected it as material to be taught in schools due to the smiling on such a relationship as a threat to the Jewish people. And of course, the enlightened are out there sneering and snorting their disdain for this decision because the book seems to bless the idea of mixed relationships. According to the Times of Israel site, the book is, quote, saturated in the assimilationist fear of the diaspora. That undermines what is at the heart of successful literature, humanism. And then the reporter on the Times site, one Mitch Ginsburg, notice he lives here but has not adopted a Jewish name, like his rival, that lunatic leftist at Haaretz, Mr. Bradley Burstyn. Ginsburg says, literature is not a collection of morality tales, but at best an entertaining look at the inner workings of human souls, to which I say this is pure Glatt-Kosher claptrap. Great literature, greatest literature in human history is the Bible, whose every story is a morality tale and commonly plunges to the deepest of the inner workings of the human soul. So the ban on the book by the Ministry of Education triggered a rush to the bookstores today by enlightened Israelis of Jewish extraction, and the publisher announced they're all sold out and is going into a second printing. And as further evidence of the importance of this novel, the leader of the opposition in the Knesset got into the act. Yitzhak Herzog, grandson of the chief rabbi of Mandatory Palestine, who said the decision presented, quote, a backward world view. He was speaking to students at a pre-army academy, and he said they should all read it, and he himself had bought several copies. And then there was Aleph Bet Yehoshua, A.B. Yehoshua, one of the triumvirate novelists here, these three horsemen of the secular Israeli apocalypse, who said the decision by the ministry threatens all literature. What's really going on is the rejection of the age-old Jewish notion of Jew marrying Jew as necessary for the survival of this people. In the book of Genesis, we listen to Rivka. Rebecca grieve over her son Esau's marriage to one of the local Canaanite girls, these very low-level people, and then, of course, after the people return from Babylon, Ezra and Nehemiah are adamant that the remnant of the people who stayed here over the 70 years of exile must now divorce the women they married. And, of course, the fact that the Babylonian community in its overwhelming majority did not return with Ezra and Nehemiah, the way the American Jews have stayed there and not come here. They enjoyed in Babylon their lives among the Goyim, too, which led to the Purim story and the tale of a proto-Holocaust that was aborted in the nick of time. The Queen Esther remained the queen, and there is a deep meaning to be mined in her continuing marriage to the king after this story concludes. I remember once listening to the haughty Hollywood actress Lauren Bacall, whose birth name was Betty Persky in the Bronx. Shimon Peres used to be Shimon Persky, and these two were cousins. Bacall was asked about her marriage to Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca. Was in Casablanca, and about their love affair and how her family was opposed and how she sneered at these small-minded people, as if the Jewish opposition to her intermarriage was a bigoted response. Her marriage to Humphrey Bogart took place more than a half century ago, and a story today in Israel was about this romance, this book. This story about a Jewish woman and a so-called Palestinian, Bougie Herzog, supporting the book, and Mitch Ginsburg, likewise disdainful of the assimilationist fears of the diaspora. When he wants a book to wave the banner of humanism, all I could do when I read about this stuff was to slowly shake my head at Herzog, this grandson of the chief rabbi of the Yeshuv of the 1930s. It's the two-front war. One front is the Goyim with their knives and missiles and Molotov cocktails and money from abroad, and the other is the Erevav, who object to the Jewish people's obsession with national cohesion. They want the Jews to be more humanistic. universalistic. That's right, Mitch. That's right, Bougie. How bigoted we Jews are to oppose marrying non-Jews. Yeah, it was interesting today, New Year's Eve for the Goyim, that one story about this romance novel, which sounds highly unoriginal, And another story dealing with the continuing charge by that enlightened professor at Hebrew U who called Ministress of Justice Ayelet Shaked a neo-Nazi. They're connected. In Your Idiot, I think, and for sure on YNetNews.com, another academic and a regular columnist in Idiot, Aviad Kleinberg, objected all around to the use of Nazi to describe people in Israel. No fan of Shaked, he still has the sense to see the hyperbole of that charge. But he also used the story to go after the prime minister for his belief that it's the 1930s all over again, and Iran is the new Nazi Germany, and he objects to Bibi's references to the Holocaust. He wrote of the paranoia of his ideology. He mocked Bibi's belief that, quote, they're all rising up to destroy us. In Netanyahu's nightmarish world, we are always the victim fighting for our lives, and our rivals are always Nazis like Hamas and Hezbollah, close quote. This is a complaint, at least as old as my own half-century acquaintance with post-Jewish Israeli academics like him, how they scoff at anybody, Israeli, and particularly diaspora Jews, who for their paranoid belief that the whole world is against us. And of course, they never see the hatred and aggression against Israel as having anything to do with anti-Semitism and its worst instance called Nazism. They live in a kind of fantasy world in which they're not Jews, and therefore they cannot be the targets of anti-Semitism, and we are not surrounded by 550 million Muslims whose religion could not be more open about its homicidal hatred of Jews. I said before, the more I ruminate on leftists like these, the more I see their cowardice. They are incapable of facing the truth that Zionism, as a cure for anti-Semitism, has failed. It connects as well to their need to see the ancient ones as our victims. Notice how he said, we are always the victims fighting for our lives, which they object to. This oddly gives them comfort, because it means we are ultimately in charge of our fate and have the power to placate our enemies by ceasing to abuse them. So there's always hope that we will at some time stop persecuting them, and afterwards they will love us. I find it fascinating, even entertaining, to read, to listen to such leftist academics here who poo-poo Bibi's vision of us being surrounded by Nazis when we have just been through the nightmare summer in which Obama was victorious in his drive to hand a king's ransom over to the Iranians and help them build an atomic bomb to destroy our country, the one Aviad Kleinberg still lives in with the rest of us. How interesting he dismisses the analogy between Nazis and our neighbors in the very weeks they are trying to murder us day by day in acts of terror, no less terrifying as attacks by Nazis, Cossacks, Romans, Ukrainians, and so on and so forth. He cannot see the similarity between today's Iranians, as shameless as Nazis in their desire to destroy us, as shameless as their Persian forebears in the age of King Ahasuerus and his vizier Haman, who also contemplated the complete extermination of all Jews in the Persian Empire at its height. This defense mechanism leads men like Kleinberg to go out this evening on the town, celebrating New Year's Eve with the rest of the Goyim. In Hebrew, we have known for centuries this evening as Sylvester. After Saint Sylvester, this is his saint's day. He was the pope in power when Constantine, the Roman emperor, famously converted himself and set in motion the conversion of his entire empire to Christianity. He made his move at about 312 of the Common Era. And as evidence of his sincere conversion and piety, he forbade the Jews from living in Jerusalem, and he put shackles on the performance of Jewish life. In other words, this is hardly a night for Jews to celebrate. So this is what I mean about the two-front war from the outside and the inside. The Hellenists, as they were known in the age of the Maccabees, when the Jewish athletes were ashamed of their circumcision. In a way, Aviad Kleinberg distances himself as an Israeli from the reality of aggression against Jews in this generation, as in every generation, in another transformation of the same urge. In that news item about that book, praising basically the disappearance of the Jewish people, for that is the proven end result of intermarriage, it's been the same story in the liberal democratic West and even the Soviet East, where the Soviet persecution of Jews included, like Constantine, the prohibition on living a Jewish life by the communists that led to mass intermarriage in the Soviet Union, which was different, or the same result, rather, as a different way of getting Jews to intermarry in the West. Be nice to them. So once again, in the same week, representing the post-Jewish left, led by the de-Judaized grandson of the chief rabbi, Bougie Herzog, was waving the flag of yearning to be loved by the Goyim. Earlier, if you remember, he had criticized Ayala Shaked's anti-NGO legislation because the Goyim will not like it. As soulmate Tzipi Livni sounded the alarm over our increasing isolation. And here today, Herzog was singing the praises of a love story between a Jew and a Gentile. And all on Silvesto, named for a major persecuting anti-Jew pope. As Avad Kleinberg's Didiot opinion piece was entitled, "The Left Must Not Adopt the Right's Holocaust Discourse," because this discourse is, for him, just too Jewish. Listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Yeah, the more I think about the left, it's their cowardice that seems to explain their contemptuous behavior of things Jewish. They're incapable of facing the reality that we're surrounded by these 550 million Muslims whose religion, they have to know by now, is as dangerous to us as Christianity was. At its worst, as the black fascism of the Nazi period in Germany was, and the red fascism in communist Russia. Memory.org on Sunday posted a video, with subtitles, of course, of a Saudi cleric, Sheikh Muhammad al-Munajjid, who preached a sermon in which he said, quote, "Our hatred of Jews stems from their having cursed Allah. The Jews are today's plague, a malignant disease. They have a black history stained with bloodshed," close quote. This is from a Muslim priest in Saudi Arabia. For every Friday, the blood spurts from heads and hands chopped off in public. He continued, quote, "The Jews are at the top of the list of enemies. The Jews of today are the same as the Jews of yesterday. Allah has shown us their traits. Our battle with them will continue until the end of time. In their false Torah, it says word for word that all non-Jews are impure and Jews are allowed to rape non-Jewish women. The Jews are, according to their own Talmud, polytheists." Could there be any better examples of the primitive psychological defense mechanism of projection at work here than in these statements by this Muslim divine? He accuses the Jews of a blood-stained history. When just look around at the Middle East, at these Arab-Muslim countries, they're always killing one another in the hundreds of thousands and causing millions to run for their lives. Reuters yesterday had a story on ISIS regulations on having sex with female slaves that have been captured. And here is this sheikh claiming the Torah calls for that. What's really interesting is the timelessness of his thinking. He says the Jews are at the top of the list of enemies, and that's exactly what it says in the Quran, which was written some 13 centuries ago. No change there. He calls the Torah false, and that too is right out of the Quran, which says the Jews, quote, change words from their meaning or in their context, something like that. And by that, they're alluding to all the differences in the stories found in our Bible and their plagiarized versions in the Quran. It's the Jews, Islam claims, that changed words and changed the narrative. ISIS has kidnapped and enslaved and continually rapes thousands of girls. And here is this Muslim holy man preaching from the homeland of Islam, that it's the Jews whose Torah licenses them to rape non-Jewish women. Does Aviad Kleinberg read stuff like this? I doubt it.
Hashem yivne beito, Hashem yivne beito, lehashrut sham shchinat, shchinat kodesho. Hashem yivne beito, Hashem yivne beito, lehashrut sham shchinat, shchinat kodesho. Mashiach yavo. Mashiach yavo letaken et haolam et haolam kulo. Hayai Mashiach yavo. Thank you. Mashiach Yavo, oh, Mashiach Yavo, oh, letaken et ha'olam, et ha'olam kulo. Hayai Mashiach Yavo.
Last item, the good news item. One of the leading Haredi authorities on contemporary halacha, Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, has spoken up against that recent decision made by the Enlightened Israeli Medical Association, or whatever its official title is, ruling that paramedics on the scene of a Jew-killing attempt, a.k.a. a terrorist attack, must treat the most badly wounded first, even if it is the would-be Muslim maniac. The paramedics, they said, are not to judge between the wounded. Well, Rabbi Kanievsky said today in a meeting with the paramedics of Hatzolah, the Haredi version of the Magen David Emergency Medical Response Service, he said just the opposite. Of course the wounded Jew or Jews are treated first, not the terrorists. And if it appears the terrorist, he or she, is at death's door, do nothing to help them and let them die. How's that for a breath of fresh air? For old-fashioned, sane, moral, Jewish judgment. It reminds me strangely of the kibbutz, the communal arrangement that purposely was intended to destroy the nuclear family. Leftists commonly believe they are smarter than the God of creation who clearly designed the family unit. Leftists know better, and so their thinking is always challenging the natural order, in which it's right for Jews not to treat their own first. Leftists experience that reflex as chauvinistic when compared to their exalted Olympian universalism. Anyway, a final request from you all, subscriber friends. If you've got a minute, please log on to Amazon.com, click on Books, type in Phantom Nation, hit Enter. Find the number 26 on the upper right side of the screen. Click on that and find the nasty post claiming that yours truly condones torturing Jews. Click on that, and I think you'll find two buttons. If you don't have an account with Amazon, I think you can click on the one that's marked inappropriate. If you do have an account, click on the abuse button and enter your email and register your objection in one sentence to this nasty libel. Maybe if Amazon is bugged by enough complaints, they will remove the ugliness. So, thanks. That's it for the week. Laila tov, v'shabbat shalom, me'eretz Yisrael.